Talky.
All right, episode 8 of Pod Rock. We're back. With me, as always, is Mr.
Justin Case, Esquire.
So I know we've been kind of busy ourselves off and on, so we're kind of getting back to it again. We got some news tonight. We're going to talk about practicing. I know we kind of mentioned we were going to cover bass players. I think we're going to get a little bit more info, and I think we're trying to chase down possibly someone else to be on the podcast. Don't want to say too much yet because I don't know if it's going to pan out or not. But how you been, man? How's things going?
Wheeling and dealing, styling and profiling. And that was a Ric Flair thing, not a inappropriate thing. Anyway.
So you've been busy doing doing some lessons with one of your idols. How's that? Tony McAlpine. How's that been going?
It's going pretty good. Just great to have the ear of someone, a virtuoso. I mean, it's a blessing. It's not something I take for granted at all. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm getting a workout, that's for sure. There's a lot of things I'm being challenged on that I've never done before, and it's the kind of thing where, like, you gotta really stretch and do a lot of things to make sure you don't hurt yourself, because it's pretty intense. Use of all the digits on your fret hand, and also in some cases you're tapping, you know, some of it doesn't involve a pick at all. So it's been great, and a lot of stretches, like, you know, five, six fret stretches, you know, and for someone like me with average size hands, that's no small feat. So, but it's great because I never thought I'd be able to do a lot of those kind of stretches. And I'm actually, my hand is conforming, but going back to just making sure that you warm up before you play.
Yeah. Well, it's a good topic to get into for the practicing that we're going to talk about.
And hydration.
Yeah, absolutely. So just real quick, some of the news. I know there's been a lot of stuff going on, a lot of places, a lot of venues are opening back up. Concerts are going to be a thing again. I'm excited about that. We've got some people coming through our area. I've been reading that the Monsters of Rock cruise for February 9th through 14th of 2020 will be hosted by Eddie Trunk. It's going to have Alice Cooper, Queensryche, Skid Row, LA Guns, Winger, Great White, Y&T, Tom Kiefer, just a slew of people. So if you're a boat cruise person and you love rock music, see if you can get on the boat and go get rocked. Seven Dust and Mark Tremonti are doing a tour in September, but they're not going to be on the West Coast. It's more East Coast based. So if you're a Mark Tremonti fan, I am, huge fan, and Seven Dust, check them out. They will be absolutely worth your effort of going and seeing them. Kind of looping back to our last podcast, a little bit of news on Queensryche. Really interesting. Scott Rockenfield dropped his own website. Some of the pictures on there are of just him and the original band members that are left, Mike Wilton and Eddie, the bass player. So I don't know what's going on there. If we're going to be looking at maybe another, you know, lawsuit or what, I don't know. A lot of speculation. The other thing that was interesting is Megadeth's bass player. He was let go for a lot of
bad things.
You know, your personal life's your personal life, and this is just one of those scenarios where I think, when, you know, not only do you trust the wrong people, but you find yourself in the wrong scenario, it could cost you, you know, a lot, their livelihood in this case. The last thing I wanted to bring up is Jerry Cantrell finished another solo album. There was pictures, and I'm sure a lot of people might know this already, but Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses was featured in some of the pictures and in the video that they finished up. So I don't know if that's for Jerry's solo album. I still need to find out some more information about that, but I'm a huge Alice in Chains fan. Jerry Cantrell, major influence on me as well. A lot of Seattle bands. But I figured that was interesting enough to bring up in here. So the topic du jour of practicing, you brought up the hydration and the stretching. I think that would definitely be a great jump off point for me. I definitely try to stretch my hands. I try to stretch my fingers out. How much water do you drink in a day? I know it sounds kind of like a doctor's question, but it makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Especially with the ligaments in your joints and everything. That's just, again, one of the things in my lessons, like, stay hydrated. It's one of the biggest things. And, you know, usually I think it's, I've got one of those filters at the house, you know, one of those Brita things, you just pour it through. And so I just throw some ice cubes in it from the fridge, and it's great. So I never used to do that because I never liked the taste of water. But if it's ice cold, I will drink it. So that's helped a lot. And so the huge difference, like, you know, 100% better. Because I think that if you're not hydrating all the, you know, your muscles and your ligaments and everything, it's you're going to start getting upset. I know, or at least frustrated with, if you're, especially if you're trying to learn a new part. And I can tell you, because what happens is, especially if it's a part you're trying to learn where you're not used to using like the pinky or maybe the ring finger as much to do very complex movements, you're going to be in a world of hurt. You will. Because what will happen is, and I've experienced this, I actually, like yesterday, I was having problems because the pinky and the ring finger were not, because when you play in a lot of, you know, most complex riffs, your fingertips are like a piston, right? And the finger is going down on each note. Well, for me, and everyone's got, you know, different hands, and some people have hands that give them problems because you have to, you know, the guitar, to make it sound good, it's you know, you have to make sure you're bending this, you're not bending the string out of pitch when you're supposed to be pressing straight down to do, especially tapping licks or anything like that. And that's what this is, a two-handed tapping thing. And so each of those fingers has to land on those frets like a piston and be independently pushing the alternating between the notes is what I'm trying to say. And I think really that hydration really makes a huge difference. But the other thing also is that you need to get in the zone when you start practicing, like you would if you're going to record or play something, do a gig or something. And that's so important, because what you need to do is get in the zone, turn off that criticality, self-critical factor, and give yourself a break when you're learning something new. And that's something that I make sure that I try to do, because next thing you know, you're going to be trying to learn a new part, and let's say you got to learn it in a couple weeks, you know, in this case for me, it's, you know, most of the time it's like a week or two I have to learn this, and I feel pressure from that, even though it's you know, because you want to be able to nail the part. For me, it's a personal accomplishment. It's, you're your own worst enemy, right? Your own worst critic. And for me, I have to prove to myself, it's not the teacher, it's not the, you know, in some cases bandmates or a friend or something, hey, we're working on this part, it's me, it's your own audience, your internal audience. And
that's kind of the double-edged sword, right? At least for me, is I'm very critical of the stuff that I do. And I mean, as you well know, I bounce things off of you and I'm like, man, either this sounds like crap or I've done it before, or, you know, you need that reality check sometimes. And some people might not have that when they're playing, but you bring up a really good point. For me, when I was learning, even just to play the instrument itself, taking time, even if you get frustrated, move on to something else for a little bit, mm-hmm. right? And then take a break or come back to it the next day. And I found that even when I was doing and learning, you know, a specific part in a song or trying to figure something out myself, if I stepped away from it for a little bit, played something else, and then came back to it the next day, it was almost like that muscle memory kicked in a little bit better the next day. Absolutely. Right?
Yep.
So giving yourself that space to be able to grow and realize that you are challenging yourself, which is good. It's absolutely good that you're going to challenge yourself when you're learning and when you're playing, right? You want to do that. You don't want to stay stagnant. I mean, maybe you do, but for me, I always try to learn different things. And I'll forget stuff that I knew before, have to come back around and try to relearn that stuff. Yeah, even the pros. I think we were kind of talking about that the other day, right? Where, you know, these bands that have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 albums out, that's a wide range of music that they can play at a show. And even they have to kind of go back into the catalog and maybe relearn some of the songs that they even wrote, just because it's that whole, you know, thing that you create something and then you kind of abandon it, right? You've created it, you've built it, you put it out there, you recorded it, you go and you tour on it, but eventually you move on, you try to write new stuff, you try to challenge yourself, you try to put that new stuff out there, and that's what you kind of focus on, not the older stuff that you've done before. I know, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, if you're someone, a band who does, or a solo artist or whatever, has a huge catalog, a lot of times what they'll do is, if it's a group that's been around for 20 years, they'll do a 20-year tour, 20-year anniversary tour, like Dream Theater did when they did theirs. They dug out of stuff off their first album, and at that point, it had been 20 years, and so they had to dig into, they had to learn those songs again. Eddie Van Halen and the rest of the band, they're, you know, they all had to learn stuff off of like Women and Children First, and also Fair Warning, because Gary Cherone, when he was in the band, he's a fan of the band, right? So he's like, I want to play stuff like Romeo Delight and Somebody Get Me a Doctor, some of those, right? And they were songs that hadn't been touched. And I remember Eddie Van Halen saying, man, I haven't done this stuff in years. I got to remember all this stuff. I got to learn how to play all this. He goes, I'm a much different player now, you know? And that was when I was like 17. And it's true, though. And that's always stuck with me, is that. And then even if you're someone who, if you're, you know, a musician who does a lot of session work, you're not going to remember all that stuff. You might remember, I mean, it's always going to be in there. But then you have to go revisit it and pull that file out of the filing cabinet and then read your notes, go over it again. You'll be able to get a lot faster because you've done it before, right? But you have to go fetch it. And it doesn't matter who you are, pro, learning, whatever. So I agree 100%. And for me, like when I learn, like some of the stuff I'm learning now is some of the most stuff I've had to learn ever. I mean, and it'll always create kind of a mark in my brain because of how much effort I've put into it. And for me, it'll be like, oh, yeah, this, you know. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, kind of a sidebar off of this conversation with learning a lot of different types of music. I was thinking about this the other day to where, like, what is the point of learning other people's stuff and or practicing or taking a section of it? And the answer is that the more types of things that you learn from other people's things, even if you just take a part of it, that toolkit is expanded. Because you might find yourself in a situation as a musician where maybe you're filling in for someone, or you're doing a session thing, or you're writing new songs, and you say, hey, I want to go in this direction. That those abilities are in there somewhere that you could pull from. And let's say you're someone who practices scales all the time, or you practice or really focus on alternate picking. Well, you come across those parts that require a lot of the intricate alternate picking or sweeps or whatever, sweep picking, you're going to have those skills there. So when you have to learn something new, you're going to be able to learn it very quickly because, oh, he's doing this, right?
Yeah.
And I always think of, like, some of the guys, you got, like, Derek Trucks and some of the guys that would fill in or get, you know, invited to play with, like, Allman Brothers stuff. I think there's a guy, was he Jimmy Herring? He was an older guy, and he was doing, I think he had to learn, I mean, this is an old article I read, like, 10, 15 years ago. He had 2 weeks to learn, like, some crazy amount of songs. Like 100 songs or something stupid like that, like 50 or 100 songs. He had to learn them in 2 weeks. I'm like, yeah, be kidding me. But because he was so familiar with the material and the style of music that it was, it's really not that bad.
Yeah, I think you nailed it on the head when you said that there's something to learn from everything and every style. You know, I'm not necessarily the biggest country music fan, and, you know, not that I dislike it, but it's not something that I usually go out and seek to hear. You know, I hear it sometimes on the radio, just randomly driving, or, you know, one of my friends will, hey, you need to go check out this song. But I agree with you 100%. There's something to learn in everybody's style. You're not going to sound like Eddie Van Halen when you play. You're not going to sound like Stone Gossard from, you know, Pearl Jam, if you were to try to learn the Pearl Jam stuff, or even, you know, any band that you want, or even John Petrucci. You know, that's a guy that, you know, you and I both like. Even sitting down and playing it, your own fingers and your own style, your own sound is going to come out. But the fundamentals, I think, is what you're talking about, and I'm agreeing with. The fundamentals, fundamentals, I can speak English tonight, they're there, right? Your song structure, the key that it's written in. You know, when you start looking at it as more than just a, okay, I'm hitting, you know, an A5 or a variant of an A sharp, you know, or an A minor, you start to pick up on how those songs were written, the chords that kind of go along with it, and the root notes that go in, you know, in that key. And I think that's the thing that worked for me so much when I was learning music. One, I was inspired to learn more because I was trying to learn the songs that I really liked, right? When you can play something as a teenager that you're amped up about, or that you get that musical energy from when you listen to it, when you can play that or play along with it, it's that kind of almost that driving force to keep you going to learn more. And then you start learning other people's music and other songs, and you start picking out things that you liked about it. And then you start learning how they wrote the songs, what the key was in, what chords went together when they wrote it. And then when you kind of take that all in, at least for me, that helped me kind of start to establish how I would write. Because when I start learning, you know, learning a song that I want to write, or I start, you know, writing riffs, some of that stuff comes back to me. It's like, okay, I'm writing an E. You know, what notes are going to go good with E? Okay, do I want a flat in there? Do I want to use, you know, an A or a B? Or do you want an F sharp? Or do you want a G? All those kind of things kind of start coming into my mind when I'm writing a song. And a lot of that is because of the music that I learned how to play and other people's styles. But a lot of them, if you just take a look at the root note, a lot of it's the same, right? You can have a lot of the same chord structure. It's just how you phrase it and how you put it together that makes the difference. And I think even Eddie Van Halen said that. There's 12 musical notes. There's not a series of notes that hasn't been played before in a row or in a certain phrase. It's how you do it in that grouping that makes the difference, right? Do you hold a note out longer? Do you bend a note? Do you, you know, make it a sixth note? Do you make it a quarter note? All those kind of things come into play when you're writing. And I think that, you know, if you can listen to different variants and different songs, you're going to definitely collect up on that knowledge and see how those people kind of approached it when they were writing their music. But that's, like I said, that's kind of how I learned and how I got into writing music and what I even still do. I'll sit down and play songs from people that, you know, I enjoy, or songs that really kind of get me amped just to loosen my fingers up, like you said, right? Almost kind of like a stretch. You know, find some songs that are a little bit easy to play. If you want, warm up on those or warm up on scales, right? And then once you've kind of done that warm up, your fingers will be ready, you'll be ready. And then you can kind of either get into that creative mode because you've already had that time to kind of soak into it.
I improvise myself. I'll pick a key I haven't played a lot in. And to warm up, I improvise. I'll spend 10, 15 minutes improvising for a warm up over music, you know. And that's great. I mean, and doing different, having different beats and different back beats to mess with so that you're in time. And that's important thing is that you're in time, and everyone has to learn how to count. Everyone has to learn how to be in time with the music. Otherwise, and even people that aren't musicians would hear you live and say, man, this guy doesn't sound right. You got to be tight. And people are like, well, there's no feeling. Still got to be in time with a drummer, dude. Doesn't matter.
Well, you find that feeling when you play. Yeah. I want you to kind of expand a little bit more on kind of your approach to practicing and what you do, because everybody's going to do it a little bit differently, right? To get into that headspace that you had brought up at the beginning of the podcast, you got to kind of get yourself in the zone, focusing on what you're kind of doing and what you're trying to accomplish with it. My style might be different than other people's. Like you're saying, you improvise, you probably have like a beat track in the background or the metronome, like you're saying, that, you know, to get yourself kind of, you know, in that mental mind frame. So when you do that, and this would be interesting, I think, for other people who are listening to the podcast, if they're learning out, you know, there's my style and there's yours. Once you're done kind of improvising, do you take like 5 or 10 minutes to do that? And then what do you focus on afterwards?
I will warm up. I will, first of all, I will kind of get in that zone. I will, first of all, think about the things musically that make me want to play. It's just, you kind of like turning a switch on. And then, you know, sometimes you got to get centered, right? Depending on what's happening in your day, or if you've got other things trying to encroach in that headspace, you're almost like putting up a force field and you're operating within that bubble, right? And then I think about just stepping into a musical environment, a musical reality in my head. And like I said, turn off that criticality and start saying, you know what? I might not hit every note correct, because you're exploring, right? And you're warming up that way. And it's great to do it that way, because you're going to have ideas that are going to pop up. You're going to want to stash those, jot them down, or say, hey, let's save this for something. And that's the great thing about music, because even when you're warming up, or even when maybe you're just messing around, there's some cool ideas there. And so I usually warm up for like 10, 15 minutes, or until I feel like my hands are going to be, you know, well circulated. And, you know, currently right now, I've got stuff that I have to practice to expand my skills. And so I hit that stuff. But before I do that, I kind of, to get in the zone, I improvise over maybe, you can even pull up a YouTube video or something like a backing track or whatever you want. But don't make it the whole evening, right? That's just something to get your juices flowing a little bit.
Right.
You, and you have to clock everything. So set it for 15 minutes. When that's done, move on to the next. If you've got an hour and a half to practice, or an hour, or even 30 minutes, say, at this 30 minutes, this is what I'm going to block it out as, right?
Yeah, be focused on what you want to achieve.
You have to be focused, yeah, because you're going to have this practice session that's all over the map. You're never going to move forward. You have to be disciplined. You can't get around it if you want to excel, because what's going to happen is you're going to do the same. If you're not organized, you're going to do the same thing every time you play. And then you're going to get bored. Say, well, I got it out of my system for now. I got my, you know, my need to improvise and pick up the guitar that I play maybe once a month. And the rest of the time it's video games or things that aren't important. Right. Because we all have things that are important. You've got family. You've got work. You have other things that get in the way. Right.
Yeah.
Because that's just the way life is. Right. And things are important aren't in a way, but you know what I mean? It's things that take you away from being able to, because we only have 24 hours in a day.
Yeah. The headspace that you get into, I think I want to address two things. There's two different headspaces that I can be in, right? I can be in that super creative headspace, which is so gratifying when you're writing your own stuff and you're putting it together, right? And that's just for me. Some people might just want to play cover tunes, and that's, you know, good on them.
Hey, whatever.
Yeah. For me, when I'm writing something and I can put something out there and record it and get it out of my head into something and build on that and construct it into a song, it's a super high for me, right? But at the same time, I still like just jamming, just the jam, right? So your headspace, you know, for your 10 minutes of, you know, warming up, improvising. Sometimes I'll even do that over other people's songs, right? Or just a backing track to, you know, to songs, just to get the fingers warmed up like you do sometimes. It varies, right? It's very important to definitely branch out and not do the same thing every time. It's good to get fluent in something, but you definitely want to keep challenging yourself if you want to keep striving to do more. And the only way you're going to do that is if you do set yourself those goals. Even if you don't hit them the first time, keep at it. You know, don't get discouraged, which for me, you know, that's the first half of me kind of practicing, is to kind of get that, the juices flowing and get pumped up, and then do that recording and do that other headspace.
I'm going to tell you, though, there's a thing about practicing that there's two things that for me personally that have the tendency to weigh me down or slow me down. And one of the things that Michelangelo Badio, he for those of you who aren't familiar, he's a solo artist primarily, and he's got a double guitar, so he can play with both hands doing hammer-ons, right? And I love it when he goes, he does a Facebook live stream, which is great. He's an awesome guy. I've met him before. Super cool dude. Awesome. And he goes, paralysis through analysis. Just don't get caught in paralysis through analysis. And he, you know, he's talking about, like, you know, make sure you don't get hurt and warm up and stuff. And you know, he's great, you know. And so my thing is I tend to, let's say you've got a really complex part you gotta learn, and you've got slow, medium, and fast, right? You're in the slow spot. So the slow mode is going to be learning the part, right? If you're for doing someone else's thing, then you got the medium speed, because when you're doing really complex parts, you go through stages of your flexibility and your muscle memory, all that good stuff. And so don't get stuck in slow mode over analyzing every little tiny overtone that maybe you accidentally popped off on the string when you're moving your hands around, because you need to focus on getting your hands where they need to be, and then you clean it up later, because you could fine tune it later. But because number one, if it's a 2.5 minute part and it's, you've got all these notes crammed into 4/4 time, your hands are going to have to anticipate. You're going to be playing a piano essentially. And you don't have time. If you got 2 weeks to learn this thing, you have to count for your job. You have to count for the other things that matter, like your family, things of that nature. Let's say you have a limited time. You have to make sure that you make them your practice time. And at any stage that you get to, it has to be clean. If it's snail pace, but it sounds clean, then that's a step in the right direction. And then you just go in increments. You have to use a metronome. I hate them. I want to smash mine. But it's a necessary evil, because if you don't do it, you're going to sound like crap. And well, so every...
You definitely need to take the time to focus on making sure you're landing your fingers in the right spots before you start to fly, right? You got to crawl before you fly.
Right, and you need to memorize where all those areas are.
And your muscle will remember, if you go slow enough and you continually do it over and over again, it will remember that you know, the fingering, but like you're saying, you can speed that up, right? I think one of the other things that you wanted to bring up was talking about the speed at which people learn and, you know, the focus on that. You know, some people do pick up things a lot quicker than others. What was your thought on that?
I always wondered what, let's just pick any player, I mean, that you might see, like Jerry Cantrell, for example. And it also depends on, does this player do session work? Do they have to learn a lot of other people's songs? I would surmise that Jerry Cantrell writes his own stuff mostly and really wouldn't have to worry about that. But let's take someone who's a session player, well-known one, like, Steve Lukather from Toto. I mean, that guy's played with everybody, and he's done stuff for Quincy Jones, and he's done some pretty high profile gigs. He did, he worked on the Beat It record with, Michael Jackson. He was doing the guitar parts, and with some of the guys from Toto, like it was, Jeff Beccaro with the drummer, he was in there working it and everything. And, or they hire him to come up with a part. Like there's another gig he had where he had to come up with some part. And he goes, I'm literally sitting there at the piano and I got to come up with something. And someone had asked the question, well, what if you can't? He goes, you just have to. You sit there. Until
you sit. Yeah. If you get the time to do it, you sit there until you pump it. Right. I mean.
Right. Yeah. Because he goes, everything depends on it. That's your reputation. Right. You can't fail.
Sure. I mean, when you get somebody like Quincy Jones, it's almost, you know, not necessarily holding a gun to your head because it's not like that. But the pressure's on at that point. Well, right.
Sometimes you're sitting in the studio I've read a lot of interviews with him or saw him online. And he said, you know, literally it's reading charts. It's reading, being able to sight read and all that. And it's intense because you get in there, you got to nail it and then you're out because they don't want to. You've got a certain amount of time you're allowed to be in there. Okay, next, you know, just whoever is your client is. And so I think learning new stuff, I think that people that tend to be more well-rounded with their skill set, kind of like what I was alluding to earlier, are going to have a much faster time learning new things because it won't be as much for them to understand and digest.
Yeah, and especially go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, a guy who spent his time playing the Nashville number system and doing 12-bar blues all the time, he's going to have a hard time doing a jazz session for like freaking fusion. You know, it's just not his thing.
Absolutely.
They're not going to know sheet music. They're not going to know some of the more complex chord changes and the odd time and all that stuff. They don't do that stuff. It's straight ahead blues stuff. I love blues, right? But yeah. Everybody does. I need more. I like the blues for certain things, but my point is that certain players are going to have a harder time. And I would think that, you know, I would like to be as well-rounded as possible, but you also want to be able, whatever it is you do, whatever it is you learn, try to be the best at it.
Yeah, it goes back to learning other people's styles, I think, too. When you start to learn keys, when you start to learn the music scale, what fits, what doesn't fit.
Circle of fifths, all that.
Circle of fifths, your modes. When you start kind of, even if it's subconsciously taking that stuff in and doing it, I think that also helps. I mean, sight reading, very important, especially if you're doing studio session work with, you know, important people, or you get asked to do that kind of stuff. All of that is going to help you out. It's going to, when you walk into a room and someone says, okay, this song's in the key of A, right? Or, hey, it's in the key of B or even B flat. You're going to kind of know because the circle of fifths or your modes or, you know, what you've learned from other music that has been in that key, you're going to kind of have an understanding a little bit. And it's just going to help you learn that stuff quicker, right?
Shortcut for that would be, you mentioned keys, right? Well,
yeah.
Just think of it all as the same scale. To blow people's minds, Alan Holdsworth, God rest his soul, he was a phenomenal fusion player, just amazing. And he didn't really, he kind of developed his own system. But what he said, he goes, from the first fret to the last fret on the guitar, from the high E down to the low E, he goes, it's all just one scale. That blows your mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about keys, you've got relatives, right? You got your major, minor, relative keys. It's all the same scale. You're just starting on a different note, you know, than you would a major, right? So if you start thinking in those patterns, you're saying, you know what? It's all the same scale. I'm just starting on a different part of the treadmill. That's how I think about it.
I think that actually helps out a lot. At least for me, I think we've had a discussion about it because
it's understanding the why.
Exactly. It's man, keys in modes and patterns like that. You know, when I started learning that, I'm like, man, I was kind of just like, there's so many and there's so,
right.
You know, it's so big of how many different modes you can learn. And then I think you and I had a discussion quite a few years back where it was like, you know what, like you're saying, you just start a different place, right? It's just, right. It's a pattern. It's all patterns. And right. That helped me kind of break that barrier. And I also think it helped me break that, you know, most people kind of learn their box mode when they're learning scales, right?
But hey, I'm gonna, mysterious, you know, and it's all the alphabet.
Right. But once you start, learning those patterns and where you're starting, it opens up that fretboard for you to kind of just, it's almost like a playground, right?
Right. And also remember, you could play the same notes in different areas of the fretboard, still being the same octave.
It'll sound different just because it's on a different string too.
Right. Right.
And exactly. Then if you can bend, hammer-ons, pull, I mean, it's just like this, hey, here's a smorgasbord. Here you go. You want pizza with pepperoni? Have at it. You want pizza with just mushrooms on it and sauce? There you go. You know?
Right. Right. And the thing is, think of it this way, is like, depending on what kind of gig you have, how big the venue is, how many people are there, all these things, you got a good sound engineer, a bad sound engineer, or someone working the board, you'll have to adjust playing the same song in a different area of the next so that cuts through better, right?
Absolutely. So
learning how to play the solos and things in different parts of the neck every day is good. That's the best way you can open up the fretboard. You could probably do it in a week's time, you know, if you really work on it. And so the thing is that understand the why. For example, a major scale, you know, if you want to make it a Lydian, you want to solo in the Lydian mode, well, it's going to be a sharp fourth. One note is the difference between a major and a Lydian. One note, sharp fourth. That one note makes all the difference in the flavor.
Just one note, Justin? Come on. What are you selling me here?
Right, yeah. It sounds like some kind of telebrands thing or something. No.
Well, you're absolutely right. But I think going back to what I was saying before, it could be very ominous to think about, well, there's the Mixolydian, there's the Aeolian, there's all these different modes, and that's what had
just
me
just think kind of them as derivative scales off the major.
It's yeah, and I think you're bringing up a great point to anybody that's learning or wants to learn, is that it doesn't have to be as elusive as you think when it comes to that kind of stuff. There are easy ways. I mean, you know, easy as in to train your mind on how to see those patterns and where to start to make it easier for yourself. It doesn't have to be this, oh man, what do I do? How do I do it? You know, there is a logic to it, which is great.
Right. But understand it in a way that you can understand. That way
yeah, stays and it'll be different. I mean, just right. Like we're talking about, you know, starting out and practicing. I start out warming up way completely different than you, but it works, right? It works for me. What you do works for you. And that's part of what you'll have to do is figure out, you know, what's going to help motivate you with your practicing, what's going to help you learn, and kind of learn that about yourself, and then set those goals out based on what you can put in to get the maximum amount of effort into your practicing per day, right? I mean, some people might have 2 or 3 hours. I used to, you know.
Oh, I'd love that.
Out of high school, I was playing probably 3 hours every single day to the point that my fingers were constantly peeling from the calluses on it, to the point I was trying to put lotion on them every single day just to get them to look normal.
Do the Stevie Ray Vaughan method of super gluing them back
on. Yeah, put some fake fingers on.
Well, he had those telephone cable strings he used.
Yeah, yeah. So if you got the time, great, you know, have that as much as you possibly can that your brain will absorb for sure. But
I always think about that, Ben, going back in time when I had all that time to practice. If only I had been organized, I'd probably be doing something else for a living right now.
No, I wish I spent more time.
It's not that easy. I mean, it's hard to make it's hard right now. It is. Right now, even the guys that are pros are struggling because of the change in music. But that's a whole separate show. But with the downloads and everything, they're just, even if they get an advance or something, it's some of them aren't getting one.
Yeah, it's not as lucrative at all to be a musician. No, which is it's sad. It's art. It's, you know, the same thing that somebody would go and pay for a painting, right? Someone sees a sculpture and they look at it and go, yeah, okay, it's a big mud pie just sitting there on the wall. And other people see something artistic in it. And they get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for it.
The thing is always with all this stuff, though, right? It's not delusion to have high expectations for what you're – and always have the attitude whenever you put your hands on an instrument. Always have the expectation that it's going to be more than a hobby.
Yeah.
Because if it's just a hobby, that's all you're ever going to treat it as such. And you're going to play, like I said, play it for 15 minutes, put it down. I'm good for the month or 2 months or 6 months. And that's it. You have to have the drive and a desire to be more than what you are at this current point in time. That's the crux of it. Now, not everyone has to do that. I mean, it's okay to have a hobby. I started out like that, but I know I'm capable of much more. So you know what? I'm going to go pursue that with every ounce of strength I have.
I just think I don't know. And I know people are different. For me, I think people will feel more satisfied when they can create something on their own. Right.
Right.
It's almost exactly. It's almost like when you have people that create a vehicle and an automobile and the shape of it, that's the artistic side. And I know not everybody's artistic, but when you have that and you can bring that out of you and you create it, you get so much more satisfaction.
It's one of your kids. It's one of your babies.
Exactly. You know, sleep with your guitar. Some people did that.
With pants on.
Yep. No. Yeah, absolutely. Keep it clean. Keep it clean.
Right, yeah. That's the thing with me is, you know, music is too powerful of a force for me to just be casual about it at this point in my life.
And well, I think anybody, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, anybody can be musical. I've met a ton of people like, yeah, I don't have any music ability. Oh, I can't, you know, there's just no way I could.
Right.
You know what? There's many different levels to being musical. There are people that can enjoy music, but I guarantee you, you know what? They can click time like nobody. They're snapping their fingers, clapping their hands, beating their head, you know.
Right.
It doesn't have to be picking up an instrument. Play the kazoo if you want. I don't care. But everybody can be musical. You could be a connoisseur of it. You can be involved with it at whatever level. So if you think that you're not musical, I guarantee you there will be at some level you can be. I think it's one of the seven languages. I think it's in everybody's soul that they have. This isn't like, oh, my God, bring down God in heaven here. It's in everybody to be musical. It's a human being thing. I honestly believe that. And that's just my opinion. I think everybody's got it in them. They like music. I don't care if it's game music from a video game. If you
that's cool stuff. Yeah,
it can be, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of going on a soapbox.
Hey, you know what? No. This is great. This is great because, you know, you could take a Tesla coil and replicate movie soundtracks out of it. Right. Because it has a frequency.
You sent the Twitter out that did that. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah. Did you know that you have a frequency that you operate on?
Let's not talk
about
it.
There's a device that can actually tell what frequency you are.
Making me cry, Justin. No, I get you. Tesla, one of their songs, Edison's Medicine, they used one of those Tesla coils in the middle of it to get the sound. I think that's awesome.
Yeah,
and the Twitter post that you put out that had the movie themes on it, I thought was way cool. That was really awesome.
He covered the classics, man. It was great.
The classics.
Hey, I got a request. Can you do the Simon and Simon theme? And loop it so it's 5.5 minutes long. The second season.
You know? No, The Odd Couple. That'll drive you crazy. The Odd Couple. Da, 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 da. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. But yeah, that's my thing is, I had a discussion with a very prominent musician on the phone, and I said, I've tried getting away from this and I can't. And he says, you know, out of everything you just told me, you go, that's the most important thing you've told me is that. And I appreciate the fire you have for this. And it's just me being honest. I said, I don't want to be famous. I have to do this. And, you know, in that point in my life last year, my mother was very sick, and I've had a hard time. We've had some other family members pass away, and I've had a hard time getting into trying to move forward with my music and these lessons and everything. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that can relate to this, and I'm not trying to bring the room down. I'm just saying that there's going to come times in your life when music is going to be your really good friend for you. But sometimes creatively, it's going to be hard because your mind has just been through the cheese grater. And don't let it get to the point to where it's frustrating you. Sometimes you need to take a break from it, but you do have to power through at some point. You can't live in a fetal position the rest of your life. You have to move forward, and music can help you do that, assuming you put everything in the proper perspective. And for me, I was writing this album, and it's all systems go to get it, to start getting it produced and get other musicians on there, and like top of the heap guys, the best. And guys that I've got their DVDs, I've got their CDs, and I had to say, I can't do this right now. I need to slow down because my mother ended up passing away. And, you know, totally cool, right? And there's part of me that was beating myself up because I'm like, you know, it's this COVID thing. They have the time because they're not touring, but my own personal life is not, I'm not in the right headspace for this. And my record will suffer and give off the wrong kind of energy that I want for everyone else to hear. I want to write a record that's going to make people feel good. I don't want it to be my Temple of Doom where, you know, George Lucas going through a divorce, it creates this dark tone. There's enough darkness in this world now. I want my record to uplift people and give them some hope in this dark world.
That's a nice pull with Temple of Doom, by the way. I just want to bring that out.
That's the thing is I didn't want to have that effect on people. There's enough people writing negative stuff out there. And, you know, so I want to write stuff that rocks. Right. And I want to have some power, but it needs to be something that helps someone build strength to get through their struggles. And for me, I was so overwhelmed and I'm still reeling from it, overwhelmed with losing a major pillar in my life. And then I lost another relative to cancer, you know, and I just, you know, then Eddie Van Halen passes away. I never met the man. He didn't know I existed. But as a fan, as a musician, I kind of view him as kind of a role model. And he is a major pillar that's gone very unexpectedly. I lost my dad, who's 59. Eddie Van Halen, he is what, 61 or 62? Something like that?
I think so, yeah.
You know, the freaking cancer stuff.
And, yeah, you definitely have to be in the right mind frame. You know, you don't, it's part of the reason why sometimes, you know, taking a step back and coming back to it is a good thing. You know, you'll find a different motivation. You'll reconnect at a different level that you weren't at before. And it could be at a better level than it was before.
Right. Exactly. Because you've had to push so hard to get through, to see the clouds again. Right. It's like Bilbo Baggins. He's in Mirkwood and he's sticking his head up above the trees and he gets a fresh breath. You know,
I want to see mountains again, Gandalf.
Lake Town's not that far away, really. You just got to push through the forest, right?
Just ride that barrel, man. You know,
yeah, the Lonely Mountain. You'll be there before you know it. But it's that kind of thing where everything has a time and a place, and there's a timing to things. And some people might say, "Well, you're foolish because it's all lined up, ready to go." Well, guess what? I got more songs to. I can't write songs when I'm a wreck.
Yeah, you know what?
That I want to project.
I will be probably the first to tell you, maybe not the first to tell you this, I don't know, but I'm excited to see the stuff that you're going to put out on this album, because to me, when you go through those emotional even stages, even if you don't play or you have to loop back around when you're mentally ready to go in there, that stuff is going to come out, and it's going to come out in an amazing way through music. And I'm excited to see what you're going to put out. I really am.
Well, I appreciate that. And I want to make sure that it's something solid, and I want to be able to play as a guitar centric record as I can to really give me a nice debut to whoever hears it. And that'd be good stuff, man. And it's, you know, having a show like this, and I'm not trying to toot our horn, but it really helps with that endeavor. And this is cool stuff. And so I just wanted to like tell people out there, like, don't give up and don't ever feel like you're not good enough, because that's a lie. And don't compare yourself to other people. Everyone has their own path.
Well, everyone's unique with their music and their style. Absolutely. And their playing.
Yeah. Yeah. Why would you want to sound exactly like, I mean, well, like, oh man, your heroes, they sound amazing, right? But you have your own story to tell.
Well, even they had heroes, right? So you got to keep that in mind too, right? Exactly. They started out just like you, just like me, just like every aspiring guitar player has something that they aspire to, or a person that they really enjoy their style and playing. Even if, you know, hey, if you like the way a guitar pick sounds and that's what, you know, the jollies go, sweet. But, you know, you eventually get to a point where you want to find your own in that. And you will. I mean, there's no way around it. Like I said, you're not going to sound like John Petrucci. You're not going to sound like, you know, John Bonamassa's. You're not going to sound like those people. Even no matter how hard you try, you buy their guitars, their amps. You're never going to sound like it, because your fingers are not their fingers. And what you produce on an instrument will 90% be completely different sounding. But that's okay. Yeah. That's a good thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the thing is, you know, there's even those guys have probably thoughts of like, well, man, I wish I could do this or do that. But you don't see that because they have their job is to market what they're doing, right? Mm-hmm. And here's the funny thing, and I was going to bring this up too. I would like to see, and you never see this, is see someone who learn a part. And I want to see some of these guys I want to see the iterative process of them learning something they've never played before. I would love to see that, but you never see that because all of these guys, generally musicians, you only see the finished product. You don't see the iterative stage. It's like, you know what? Let me see you day one with that metronome.
Absolutely.
I want to see you start it from slow to fast or medium to fast or whatever it is you do. I want to gauge. I want to see a standard here that I would like to measure myself, right?
Yeah.
But it's so hard to get obviously your players are very accomplished, but it'd be neat if they could dig up old recordings, maybe when they're like, you know, 16, 17, or whenever they first started playing and they're starting to learn more and get to the point to where they can start learning what they want and see, do they learn it by ear? Do they watch someone do it on a video or something? Now you always remember in the 80s, right? Or even before that, they're like, we get their records and slow the records down so we can learn those licks, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of it, because they didn't have the visual aids and all these. There are so many people that are marketing freaking guitar video instructional DVDs now. It is out of the
woodworks, man. It's insane. You just go to YouTube and everybody's got a video.
Learn classical music fast. Become a man. There are. Let me tell you something. It's all crap. There are no shortcuts. Take it from Yngwie Malmsteen. There's no shortcuts.
Now you put the time in.
Blood, sweat, and tears, and hard work.
But wouldn't you want to do that to come out the other end of that experience being good and knowing that you went through that and learned so much? And now
there's a lot of people that don't value that, Ben. You'd be surprised. I mean, everybody wants a short and easy path, right? They want to take the path of the Sith and not the Jedi, right? The quick.
I'll do what I must, everyone. Yeah, you know.
It's terrible. There are some people that manage to, they find shortcuts, but it's never genuine, right? It's counterfeit. You could tell when they're faking their way through it. And I don't want to be one of those people. I would rather know, you know what, if it takes me a year to get a part down, like a complex piece of music, that's okay, because I know I freaking did it myself.
Yeah, you learned it. Well, I think you brought up another thing where you'd said that, maybe you didn't mention this. Learning with other people too can be a great value to kind of push you a little bit. I think Absolutely. When you and I first got together, you know, I was in one of those states. I'm like, man, you can play really fast. You have a really high picking speed. And I was just like, I don't play like that. I guess I should just give up on that. Right. But then you brought up a good point that, you know, everybody has their thing. And I realized, you know, I think it was probably a week or so after that, you know, my playing style, it's like when you take and you compare, I don't know, what's the fastest guy, you know, that plays off the top of your head. Go ahead, name him.
Oh,
John Petrucci. We'll take John Petrucci.
Sure. Okay. Sure. Okay.
We'll take him. And that guy plays phenomenally fast, like really fast. And then I take a look and I compare it. Okay. Now you put Pink Floyd's guitar player.
David Gilmour.
Thank you. The name escaped me there for a second. Love his stuff. He does not play as fast as John Petrucci, but the point I'm getting to here, you have two very distinct styles, very different people, but I guarantee you, they both have their own right and their own talent. David Gilmour, he will hit one single note and make it sound like it was just created heaven and earth by holding that one note. Then you have John Petrucci that, you know, he's got so just distinct, fast, not muddled, doesn't have to play with the wall and his notes and hitting his notes because he probably uses a metronome, you know.
Yep. You know it.
It's phenomenal, right? And I realized that, you know what? I don't have to be a John Petrucci. I don't have to be a Justin Case. You know, I can be me and it's okay. Right. I don't have to play that fast. What can I do and what skills can I bring to my music that I'm doing that is unique for me, right? And I think that was, you know, looping it back to that playing with other people, you learn different things and different techniques. You don't have to be that, you know, fast or that slow or whatever, but the technique that you're learning, it's almost like you're challenging yourself a little bit too, to think in a different way. Mm-hmm. And when you find other people that they don't necessarily have to be like-minded or play like you do but they have something to bring to the table when you can find fellow musicians and jam with them, or even just sit and talk about music with them, right?
Yeah.
And that's been one of my things, I think, why we started this podcast. I think you and I realized that, you know, a lot of people have egos, a lot of people have competition. You and I are all about the music. We love it. You know, exactly. We're not intimidated by anything when it comes to you and me. We don't have this challenge, right? We have this passion for music, so we can talk about it. We can show each other, you know, different licks or different ideas. And I think that's great. So if you can also find people like that, you know, when you're learning or you're wanting to practice, heck, reach out to Justin or me if you want to. Send us a message and, you know, either ask us questions, or if you want to bounce ideas off us, or you want to tell us, right, we stink, whatever, you know. There are people out there that are willing to do that, and definitely embrace it, because it'll make you a better player too. I think that, you know, with the song that I've been working on for the past year, I know it's taken me a while, and I kind of shared it with you, and it's still not a finished product yet. I still have some things to click up. I think it's one of my best songs yet. And a lot of that is because you and I did a lot of talking of different things, styles, modes, all that stuff, right? So embrace that, you know, if you can find people to do it. And I just wanted to bring that up too, because, you know, not necessarily learning other people's songs, but there are other musicians that you can learn from too. Other than paying for lessons that, you know, teach you how to play, there are people out there that are willing to talk music with you and bring that other aspect of it to you, to either get you excited about it, because I know I get amped up talking about music all the time, but even just playing style or theories, or, hey, I think you pointed this out one time you came over. You were like, man, I didn't think about using my pinky and going up the neck, you know, on the next string down to the fifth string from the fourth string. I was always thinking I was just going to go down the same string down to the fourth fret, right? I think you brought that up, and I was just like, man, oh my God, I brought something to Justin's world that I never thought I would. You know, it's stuff like that. You know, you can feed off each other and give each other great ideas.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. I think it's really funny, because some of the riffs that you write, I'm like, that's something I go, do you like Steve Morse? You're like, who's that? Or, no, I've never listened to stuff. And he wrote a riff that totally reminded me of, like, the Dixie Dregs or some of his solo albums. And actually, it's one of the songs we use on it's a fragment of a song we use on this podcast for some of the bumper. And it's really great. And you'll be influenced, you know, in a way that might sound similar to something you've never heard before. That's the crazy thing about music. And now I would like to say, as far as modes and things like that, I really like learning more pathways, right? And now you get into, you can borrow from keys, borrow from different keys, right? From maybe a chord.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of different things you can do. You can borrow from different keys that normally wouldn't go together, because you're playing taking part of it and it make it fit for a bar. Not make it fit, but it does fit sonically, right? And so I'm exploring into that stuff. And yeah, there's a really cool YouTube channel called Music Matters, and they get into that. These are formally trained music teachers, and it's just amazing, right? And I just that stuff just really, really, there's not many things in this life that really stimulate my mind anymore, because I've kind of figured out a lot of stuff. And what music is a cool thing. It doesn't have to be mysterious, but it can be an adventure of learning aspects that you never occurred to you. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you're someone who knows every single note on the neck, right? And there will be ways to play 6 strings, 7 strings, or 8 strings, or 14 strings, whatever you got, is there. Someone will have a way of playing those strings that you never thought of. Even if you think you have it all figured out, there's always something on the guitar that it could be an alternate tuning. It could be, you know, how it's built, how it sounds, the kind of pedals you use, if you don't use any pedals at all. The great thing is there's endless options of how to create sound on the instrument. You know, start taking piano, start learning piano. I'm telling you, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take my own advice. And I've started, I don't really play piano, but I've started, I heard a melody in my head and I went upstairs to the piano, started playing it. And I was, because I know well enough on the guitar, you know, it's kind of like the keyboard. It's kind of like a fretboard, right? But I know enough of how it sounds in my head to play it on another instrument.
Excuse me.
And it's been a long week. I get up really, but the thing is, I know enough about the sound where I can go hit it on another instrument and play it. And I made a video of me, and it had a very major sound, obviously. But I was like, I want to see if I can actually bring this into fruition. I did it in like a minute or two. I got it all worked out.
And Yeah, I don't think there would be there. You know, there's obviously endless possibilities. Otherwise, music wouldn't be continually being made, which is, I think, one of the great things about music. It's endless, right? And
yeah,
there's people out there that have written riffs in music that's timeless that you can go back and listen to even now, and it's just as awesome as it was back then. And then there's some things you go back and listen to and be like, what did I, why? Yeah.
You know? And there are scales out there. There are scales out there that no one's ever heard of. Most average people have never heard of that. They are so subtle in their tonality that you're like, why would I ever want to learn these things? And I will go find those and I will go post that video. But there were scales out there that are, I almost consider them kind of hybrid in their tonality, right? They're kind of like mild. It's kind of like they're like mild versions of maybe exotic scales that, but if you play scale number, man, I think they go up into the hundreds. It's insane. There are names I've never heard of, and I found this stuff on YouTube. What is this stuff?
It's the dark side of YouTube.
Yeah, the rabbit hole of scales. But I would just like to say, I'm not trying to get too nerdy with theory, but I would like to say this for people's benefit, if you're interested in look, modes do not have to be mysterious, okay? You got your C major scale, right? And what you do is you memorize the sequence of modes going down that list. Go from C to B down the list. Every letter of that scale has a derivative mode, okay? You know, your first one is C major, it's your Ionian mode. It's the same notes as your scale, right? Your second one's Dorian. So it's going to go C, Ionian, D, Dorian. There's your Dorian mode, right? It's derivative of the second degree of the major C major scale, right? And once you learn those modes, just go down the list, it's all letters. But then you're going to have accidentals in there, sharps and flats, right? Mm-hmm. But once you learn how the system works, like you were saying, Ben, it's not going to be so mysterious anymore. Then you could take that stuff and start writing with. And it does, yeah. My approach to creating music is different than Ben's. Ben likes to build like a Lego set. I like to have a Genesis hit me and I build that way, right? But what I will say though, the building part of it for me is learning the why and the what. So if you hear something and you're using your ears in music is the most important thing, because it's going to help you learn complex parts. It's an iterative mental process of, okay, no, it should sound like this speed. The next day you're going to be like, oh, and then you can tell your hands to do it at that speed. It might not be perfect, but it's getting it there, right?
Yeah.
The mind is a mysterious, powerful thing. But what I'm trying to say is learn how music works. If you want to be the best, if you want to write stuff that's going to make you happy and be creative and really be people like, wow, this is amazing stuff, you have to get out there and create stuff that's really going to catch the ear of those who can possibly help you out in the music industry, right? But also protect all of your stuff legally, but also be prepared to know that once you get an album done and it's published and everything, even these guys like Joe Satriani, these guys, their album is put up on YouTube the next day. Someone's already ripped it and put it up there.
Yeah, so, the music industry is not the same. We should definitely talk about that. Right. Yeah.
But just go to understand the music and understand how it's built. You triads. Tri means three, right? It's a three-note chord. A dyad is two notes, you know?
Yeah. Spend the time and learn it. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's those kind of things. Know the five pentatonic scales, you know? Basic stuff. And so, like I said earlier, the Lydian mode, it's just the sharp fourth, right? The fourth note of that scale is sharp. It's a half step up. And it's not as mysterious as you think it might be. So I encourage everyone to go look into this stuff. And if people have questions and they want to learn this stuff, I was trained in music when I was 9 years old. Okay. I learned how to read sheet music. I could transpose all that stuff. But when it came to guitar, I didn't employ those skills. And now I'm taking that understanding and moving it over to that instrument. You know, when I played in school, I got made fun of, you know, oh, you're a band geek or whatever, but consider the source. These guys were a bunch of losers now, you know, and they're on TV for the wrong reasons if they're even still alive. Some of them meet untimely, you know, exits from this earth. Okay. So don't be afraid to dig into music. Don't worry about people think you, because got even the guys you might look up to, or guys, ladies, whatever, that are making music that you like, you're going to see people on YouTube or wherever it's put leaving negative comments or giving a thumbs down, and you'll sit there and you'll see like, how could someone ever put a thumbs down to this? Well, there's a lot of reasons. They're jealous because they didn't write it, and maybe they don't like it, and that's fine. But learning to deal with negativity and shutting that off. Go out there. Don't be afraid to create your own stuff.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of people. Yeah. I mean, you've seen it before, Ben, where it's like someone wrote a song and like, it's just, they love it. And I might say, this is garbage.
But well, I've had people say that about the stuff I write too. I mean, when I was playing in the bands that I played with, you know, throughout my musical endeavors, you know, I would write something and somebody would be like, you know, that really sucked. Why did you play that? I mean, I've even had, you know, a lead singer say, I'm not playing that song anymore because people liked it. I mean, I've had the gambit. I've had people tell me I suck. I've had people tell me you can't play. No, that's seriously, so like,
yeah.
You just gotta keep doing what you're doing and keep trying to perfect it. You know, I talked to, I don't remember who it was I told on the phone. My roommate at the time went and met up with some band and put their singer on the phone. And I was just like, hey, whatever you do, just keep playing. It's like that saying in The Thing You Do with Tom Hanks.
You'll plug, you know, and you run.
Run, dude. I quit.
Quit.
Yeah.
What's something snappy? Something snappy.
Yeah, exactly. The drummer was like, well, what do I do now? Well, you're a breach of contract, right? And you keep playing. You keep doing what you do and don't stop and try to always get better and perfect what you're doing if you have the motivation to do it. If you just, like you're like Justin saying, if you're just a hobbyist and that's what you want to do, great. You know what? At least you've gone and challenged yourself enough to pick up the guitar to learn something, right? You became musical in some way. We're getting close to the time here. We kind of wanted to bring up a little preview. We want to talk about a gentleman that you and I, you know, grew up listening to. Very awesome music for the time when he came out. Very controversial for his album covers, I'm sure. Mr. Ronnie James Dio. We will definitely be having a podcast on him. We kind of want to bring him up and let you guys know we're going to talk about him. We're going to talk about some of the musicians who played for him, because I think a lot of his musical journey necessarily isn't covered, because a lot of people, you know, think about Ronnie James Dio as like Rainbow in the Dark, right? It's the earlier stuff. But he sang for Black Sabbath. He's played with a lot of great musicians. Did you want to bring something up before we kind of close out on that?
Yeah. I was going to touch on some of the that's going to be like a teaser episode for maybe some of the derivative episodes regarding his guitar players and in some of his band members. And that guy has always managed. He kind of reminds me like Ozzy Osbourne. He's always managed to have the best musicians surrounding him. Right.
Is he crazy? Yeah, absolutely crazy. Yeah,
and I tell you, when Ronnie James Dio passed, I was bummed. It sucked. And, you know, you got to remember something, that you might not like the album covers, and some of the stuff maybe you might disagree with. And that's cool. That's fine. We all have different opinions and everything. But I would say that he was always a guy that like was there signing stuff for his fans. He was always, he recognized who put food on a table for him. And I had no choice but to recognize his talent, his vocal prowess, and he was so unique. And but man, I'm telling you, the musicians he had, like Doug Aldrich and freaking Rudy Sarzo. I mean, oh my gosh.
You could play the 7 degrees of Rudy Sarzo, man. He's like Kevin Bacon. This guy's played with the, I mean, you're absolutely right.
He's freaking awesome.
He's had amazing musicians that have gone and played in a lot of bands that people know. But like I said, we'll get into that.
Yeah, and we will be covering Badlands after that. We'll be getting into Badlands because I... Jakey Lee and Greg Chason and wow. So that's what we got coming up. And I try to think, I don't think of these people as like 80s people, because I followed their stuff all throughout the deal. Same thing with like, they got their start in the 80s. Yeah, but they've been putting out some awesome stuff all along the way.
Well, they've still been working with musicians for years. It just might not be mainstream, which we'll talk about how crappy, you know, the music industry is on a different podcast. But
I can't wait to
trash it.
Unsheathe my claws for that one.
I'm gonna take a big old dump on it, and it's gonna be the best experience of my life.
Oh, it's so bad, man. It's terrible.
It's horrible.
There's no instruments anymore.
Okay.
It's like some kind of generic beat, and then it's stupid.
I did it. I'm bringing it up. Okay. We'll do a timeout on that. I'm going to say Because the music industry is opening back up, go support your bands. This is what they do for a livelihood. Buy the merch. I know $20, $35 for a shirt might seem like a lot, but they really, this is what they do for a living. Just like I go to a regular job, this is what they do for their regular job. They put their pants on like everybody. They still have to go from town to town, hotel to hotel, you know, ride a bus. Yes, that might seem fun, but after a while, this is the job for them. This is what they do to make their money. So please support music, support bands that you like, buy the merch, buy the music, and get out there. And
don't post it. Don't steal it.
Yes, please don't. From someone who understands how hard it is to make music on the short amount of time that I have in my life to do it, for people to be able to write something and put it out within 2 years, mixed, mastered, it's a lot of time, it's a lot of effort, and it's what they do. It's time away from their families, it's time away from things that they could be doing, and this is their job. So, I mean, I get paid to do what I do, they should get paid to do what they do. That's just my opinion. I will always pay for music, just because I understand what goes into it. So,
bootleg concerts are okay.
Yeah.
That was never put on the market as an official product.
I want to give a shout out to Chuck Lynch. We hope this finds you well. Those guys are really cool. You can check out their podcast. It's home cooking, man. It's great to hear those guys just talk. It's
kind of really funny. Back into that's great. Yeah, I'm gonna go pull up their latest episode. I tell you, those guys are hilarious.
They're fun. They're just fun to listen to. And Chuck's a fun guy.
Brian McCormick, he's great too. We got to get him out of here.
Yes, absolutely. Fireside Chat. Sauce Boys. I want to throw them a little. How you doing?
Yeah, those guys are great.
Yep. Anybody else that you want to shout out to before we call it?
Oh, man. I think it's going to do it now. Yeah, I think we're good. Yeah, for now, yes. I'm going to put together probably some official list of podcasts that I really like. So
yeah, if we forgot you this time, please know that we appreciate what you guys do. We know what it takes to put these things out. And we appreciate you guys listening to us, too. So, you know, keep rolling. We'll keep rolling. Once again, if anybody wants to leave comments, we appreciate it. If you have questions for us, please don't, you know, be scared to post it. We like people. We don't bite. Well, maybe Justin does a little bit more harder than I do when it comes to comments. You know, we love questions. We like interacting with people. So thank you, Greg Atencio. Thank you, Chuck. Thank you to a lot of the people that have, you know, written me on the side and said, hey, we're appreciating what you guys are doing. We like that, and we like to hear it. So thank you.
And like David Lee Roth once said, if you like us, tell a friend. If you don't like us, tell an enemy, because we'll still be here tomorrow.
Thanks, David. Shout out to David. All right. All right, you guys take care. Enjoy music. It's an amazing thing.
Have a great holiday weekend, folks.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you on episode 9.